Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Mind Your Business with Howie Lim, only on Money FM 89.3.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3, and as people prioritize experience over possessions, brands tapping into this trend are seeing results. The experience economy is distinct from the service economy in that the service economy focuses on providing services in a smooth and pleasant way, while the experience economy offers an exciting and memorable experience packaged with a product purchase. Today we chat with co-founder Stuart Wee of And So Forth, one such company cashing in on the growing experience economy. Stuart, thanks for joining us today.
Hi.
Tell us about the genesis of And So Forth, what you do exactly. You're an independent dinner theatre, I understand.
We don't really like to be categorized as a dinner theatre.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We are Asia's largest immersive dining experience. That being said, what is an immersive dining experience? Basically, being able
dinner
to we transport people into a different world. The whole idea is the moment you step through the door, you are in a different world. We create that by having the illusion of set. And we invest heavily into set and lighting and sound design. We have the actors to bring that to life.
Mm. So you're putting up a performance, basically, every time you open your doors.
Yeah, performance, but the entire thing itself is the performance. From the moment you step in, from the food being theatrical, the drinks being theatrical, and it's the whole world. So basically, it's like the most recent show that we just did, which was Valhalla and the Chambers of Asgard, about Vikings and Norse gods. Right, so the entire thing was a Norwegian Norse god theme, right? Vikings. And from the moment you step through the door, even at the start where we just check your tickets, right, you're greeted by a character.
What sort of food goes with that sort of thing, though?
Exactly.
Norwegian food, what might that be?
So Norwegian food, there's stuff like Viking bread and Farakel and Norwegian beer. But we try to adapt that as much as possible to our local palates. I think because Singaporeans' palates are a lot more refined, we have so much flavors from all over the world, and so we have to make sure that we are balanced and we surprise our palates because our Singaporeans' palates as much as possible. Because I think we're quite privileged as a nation
to be quite exposed, right? Yeah. Also, don't forget the spice. We love our spice. So what sort of challenges did you face, though, setting this up, getting buy-in from, say, investors or selling the idea, so to speak?
When we started, we had no buy-ins, no investors whatsoever. That was in 2015.
Just a pipe dream.
Yeah, I mean, it was. We basically saw something in London that was similar to what we're doing now, but not as extravagant. We thought, wow, you can combine all these elements together to give the audience such an amazing, like, two-hour escape from reality experience, right? And so we took our own savings and we went in with the faith that the uniqueness of the concept and the theme would sell tickets, and those ticket sales went back into just investment into the set and the show.
Had you already realized that the experience economy would help?
I think we were just offering something that people wanted but didn't know they wanted.
Okay, why not?
I think because like everyone's craving experiences. You are playing your phone game and you're super immersed in your phone, or watching a movie and super immersed in that. But what else can be the next level of that, right? To really be in a movie set. All right, to really be part of that show or part of that game. So that's what we are creating.
How would you say, if I had to split the two in what you're doing, I know that you present it all in one package, the performance and the food, and everything goes together. How do you differ from, say, other offerings out there? I know you're also unique in that you've put the two together. But say, for example, at some point, the trend was molecular gastronomy, and that looks like a performance already. You've got all that chemical reaction going on. There's dry ice floating everywhere. So how are you different in that regard? Because one might feel you're not concentrating on the food, neither are you concentrating on the performance.
Yeah, so that's the thing. See, I think because of the digital age, we have a super short attention span. And hence, it doesn't need to be fully focused on just the food. Although every small detail that we do, from the set to the food to the lighting, is very, 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 very well planned and executed.
You have to, because if you don't and you're espousing that you're doing it so well, people will notice.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, when these things happen, so I mean, like, if you're talking about molecular gastronomy, you're still going to walk into a restaurant, right? And then you know that the theater is going to be the food, just the food.
Mm.
but now I'm going to take you into the Viking world, per se, right? Or Alice in Wonderland, and you are going to go into that tea party with the Mad Hatter, with the set, with the teacups, with the Mad Hatter running around doing stuff, and then we bring out the food that's themed according to that. And so I think, like, there's nothing else out there that is what we're offering, especially, talking just about Asia, right? Because in London and New York, these things are booming right now.
Mm. Would you say audience participation is a must? Because there are some sort of reticent audience members who may not want to really take part, if you will.
It doesn't really matter because the audience might not want to take part at the start, but
you'll get them eventually.
Exactly. Mm. At the end, like in the middle of the show, you will start seeing people who are quiet before suddenly come out and start saying stuff or like being more participatory, yes.
We're speaking with co-founder of And So Forth, Stuart Wee. Stuart, when do you anticipate profitability, or is it hand over mouth right now?
I think, well, profitability has been something that we've been chasing. There were months that we are profitable, there are months that we're not, and it really depends on the team and the show. So if we are profitable, the profit that we make goes back into the next show.
Yep.
And then the next show gets better, right? And then if we break even, then we have to find money somehow, and it goes back into the next show again.
Right.
Yeah.
Any plans in place to try and, you know, boost the money intake?
Well, I think like the moment we become profitable, when more people get around the world and also in Singapore and get to know about us, and it's word of mouth, right? Then there's a strong desire for people to want to have a different experience, a more unique experience from whatever that's being offered out there.
But capacity is limited, so you could run full house for the entire run. It'll just be that amount.
When we plan our ticket sales in the way before a show, we know like there is a number of ticket sales that we need to hit to break even, and then after that, it's profitable. So basically, when we run the entire show, we know if we sell out every show, we are definitely profitable.
Of course. So in lieu of what's happening with COVID-19, etc., do you anticipate a drop in attendance, though?
So like for Valhalla and the Chambers of Asgard, we had about 3,400 people come to the show.
Mm.
We sold out from November to December. January is a bit slow because I think people are coming back from holidays. But then we still managed to, I think we're at a point where we're kind of like booked even. So that's fine.
Oh, that's great.
But the cool thing about it was that we had a lot of international guests who have seen other experiences from New York and London. I mean, they're from New York and London, and they compare us on the same level with these guys. So for us, it's a huge honor because we're a tiny dot, right, here with Singapore. And these people put us on a world stage because they've seen the other higher million-dollar productions.
And you're comparable. That must be so heartening.
For Harlan and Chambers of Asgard was about $500,000 investment.
Whoa.
Right? The entire production was $500,000.
So what's on your budget 2020 wish list? It'll be announced tomorrow. Is there something you're looking out for?
A higher marketing budget.
Some help for the SMEs in that regard, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, we definitely would love for more people to talk about us, for word to be spread. I mean, we love the organicness of it, like being word of mouth, and then the friend tells a friend, and another person sees an Instagram story, and they're like, what is this? I need to go for it, right? But then sometimes you just wish you don't have to struggle a bit too much. You just have to mass market a bit.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's tough. Yeah.
We wish you the best of luck. Stuart Wee is co-founder of And So Forth. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.